From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on October 28th when the entrepreneur Elon Musk unveiled Tesla's new solar roof. Tesla's new solar roof product, he proclaimed that day, will actually cost less to manufacture and install than a traditional roof, even before savings from the power bill. And Musk said, quote, "Electricity is just a bonus." But that wasn't the only development for the solar industry in 2016. In this hour, we are reviewing the year in solar, so to speak. Solar was the largest source of new electricity capacity additions in this country this year. But for panel manufacturers, it's been kind of a rough year. The cost for solar is going down. That's good for consumers. But when it comes to jobs, there have been questions. Well, now we hear Tesla and Panasonic announcing recently that they will start producing panels in Buffalo next summer. So we've got plenty to talk about and more before we even get to what might change under a Trump administration. Let me welcome my guest for the hour. It's the president and founder of Hunt Green LLC. Suzanne Hunt is also a member of the Hunt family of Hunt Country Vineyards down in the Finger Lakes, and she's made the trek to Rochester. Nice to see you, Suzanne. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks, Evan.
Well, let's just start with, we'll get Elon Musk out of the way first, because, you know, we get the sexy stuff out of the way first, and then we'll wade through the nitty-gritty. But no, I mean, that announcement comes in late October, and a lot of the news headlines were, well, this is the future of solar, and it could be cool now. I kind of thought solar was already cool, but Elon Musk brings a different kind of a cool factor. What was your initial take on what you saw that day?
You know, I mean, I love that they did the exciting, sexy surprise launch. And it's certainly very reminiscent of an Apple product launch. And I think that's what Elon Musk and Tesla has understood and captured. They understand that human beings gravitate towards beauty, and they gravitate towards, you know, slick design and that kind of thing. But from a market growth perspective and a technical perspective, you know, a large portion, a really surprisingly large portion of Americans live in communities with aesthetic limits. There are limitations on what they can put on their roofs and that kind of thing. And so it's just another way of expanding the market.
Okay. And so when it comes to questions that are still out there about this, because again, that announcement comes almost with this finality that, well, you'll be able to go to Home Depot and get those beautiful panels for your roof, and we're a long way from fusing the manufacturer to begin with, right? So let's talk about your questions that you would still have about what this product would be and what it would take to actually get it to market.
Yeah, so a number of, you know, big established companies have worked on solar roof tiles over the years. And so I'm not concerned about the functioning of the technology. My questions are more around how they bring it to market. So normally with a new technology that you expect to scale rapidly, you look for a path to market where they can, you know, partner with a couple of huge nationwide companies and get it out there rapidly to customers. In the case of roofing, you know, this isn't like, you know, SolarCity's a solar developer, Tesla's a technology developer, and now they're manufacturing cars. But this is a roofing product, you know, and so they have
to
work
with this isn't a panel that you stick on the roof.
You have to
build
the roof.
Yeah, right.
So, and because, you know, the folks that build and fix roofs tend to work for lots of small, local, regional companies, the pace at which they get this product to market is going to depend largely on how they partner with the folks that build the roofs.
And my concern, and this could be totally off base, but when I thought about that, because Suzanne sent a lot of notes about what's going on in the solar world, and there's a lot, but when you think about smaller and mid-sized regional companies that do a lot of roof work, installation, construction, manufacturing, my concern was, well, does this new solar roof mean that they're going to bypass the smaller companies? Is this going to injure that part of the marketplace, or can you integrate that? Can you work with the people who do those things? I mean, I don't know if we have an answer for that yet.
Yeah, I mean, the history of technology evolution is a history of folks that adapt and adopt and learn. So, you know, to the extent that roofers now need to learn a bit about electricity to be able to safely, properly install these, you know, I'm sure that that small companies can learn it as fast as the big guys. And you know, the other thing about the history of innovation in this country is, and Tesla's a perfect example, it wasn't one of the big companies that brought us the, you know, the innovative, sexy new electric vehicle or these panels. It tends to be small companies that actually bring us the innovations, and then the bigger guys adopt them. So I think we'll see all kinds of new innovations in addition to this coming from little companies.
Do you like the design of the solar roof? Does it look cool to you?
You know, they have these four different options. So you can get your red clay tiles, your slate tiles, your asphalt tiles kind of replacements. And it's funny, you know, the old farmhouse at the winery that we're renovating right now, I was dreading through. I mean, those slate roofs last for over 100 years, but it's been on there for over 100 years. Thinking, oh, God. But I'd actually be really excited about putting solar slate on the old farmhouse.
Okay. And we'll turn to other things in a second. But one more bit of pushback that I heard from some of your colleagues. And in fact, we had another guest who had to cancel today, and we'll talk to her on a different day, who initially expressed some reservation about what Elon Musk was doing on these grounds. She essentially said, look, he rolls this product out, like you said, like it's an Apple product, like it's an iPhone, or like it's something, like it's an iWatch, something cool, as opposed to our planet's in trouble and this really matters. And her concern was, don't take what is almost a necessity and turn it into, well, get it if it looks sexy or cool. You know, that takes the focus off of what really matters here, and that we are in this important moment, and there's so much momentum going in solar's direction, and now Elon Musk is making it, hey, if it's cool, do it, as opposed to it's a great idea and it's a necessary idea. What do you think of that criticism?
Well, so I think that just making the argument that this is necessary hasn't worked big, you know, fast enough to avert, you know, the climate crisis. So I'm all for what works. And I also think that, you know, any entrepreneur who wants to successfully sell a product has to some degree understand human nature. And again, looking at how technologies are taken up in society, there's always a certain number of people who will be the early adopters, but the vast majority of consumers are going to be followers. You know, they're not going to be the first person on their block or in their
community.
They're
not the first to get a self-driving car.
Right.
All their neighbors have one.
Exactly. And so I think to the extent that that Tesla is recognizing what motivates people, what gets them excited, what's, you know, people are so busy. There's so many distractions in the world now that if you can create a product that produces the results we want in terms of clean energy, efficient, low-cost energy, and is also captivates people's imaginations, I'm excited about that.
All right, listeners, if you want to join the program this hour, we're talking about the year in solar and what lies ahead for the solar industry. And any questions you have on where things stand and whether it's been of interest to you, if you've looked into it, maybe for your own house or for business. We've heard, in fact, some of what my guest does has been helping businesses throughout the Finger Lakes region do that, and we'll touch on that a little bit. My guest is Suzanne Hunt, the president and founder of Hunt Green LLC, and you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Now, in reading sort of far and wide about what's been going on in solar in 2016, in multiple places, I'm reading, Suzanne, exactly what you were sharing this morning, which is that it's been a pretty big year for solar. Solar is the largest source of new electricity capacity addition in the United States this year, which means what exactly?
So that means that with all the new electricity generation, you know, every year that, you know, some plants get closed, you have, you know, for the most part, electricity use in the U.S. has been pretty flat. So it's not like we're adding new, more and more and more generation capacity to meet new need. But, you know, you always have a lot of, right now there's a lot of coal plants closing, there's nuclear plants closing. So you need to have new generation coming online. And the majority of the new generation capacity has been solar, which is huge. And that's true worldwide as well. So worldwide, the majority of the new generation capacity has been renewables for several years now.
Okay. And here's another term that I encountered in a lot of places that I think would be very helpful for you to explain. We're moving towards grid parity. What does grid parity mean?
Yeah. So grid parity means that So the cost of your solar electricity is going to be the same as the cost you would pay your utility for electricity. And so what Deutsche Bank is saying now, and a lot of industry analysts are saying, is that in 2017, solar will reach grid parity in 80% of electricity markets worldwide. And so essentially by the end of next year, solar will be cheaper, will be the cheapest option for most humans in the world. which is this is I mean these are this is the tipping point that folks have been waiting for a long time.
And so when people hear that, they want to know that that's not just marketing. Hey, go get your panels now. We're reaching grid parity, or that it's going to be the cheapest option. What has it taken? What is it required to get to this point? Why is it happening now?
Why is it happening now? Well, so it's a lot of things, right? So it's the technology development to get the panels to a certain level of efficiency, so that more and more people buy them, so that the production scales up and you get more efficiency in the production processes, you get more efficiency in the supply chains, you get the supply chains built out, so that the cost curves can go down. You also get the finance community. I mean, this is not environmentalists saying that solar is going to be a grid parity. This is Deutsche Bank. These are the big financial institutions that are looking at this. And so then the cost of capital, the cost of financing these supply chains goes down. So it's a lot of different factors all coming together. But again, you know, if we were on TV instead of radio, I would draw some graphs where when new products. So if you look at the adoption of automobiles from yep. horse and buggy days, right? There's a wonderful presentation that a guy named Tony Seba did where he shows a picture of New York City in 1900. And you see, all you see are horses. And you can see, if you really look hard, one car. And then in 1913, so only 13 years later, same picture, same spot in New York City, all you see are automobiles. And if you look really hard, you can see one horse.
Yeah, right.
And so it took a long time to get to the point where that first automobile was there. But then once you hit a critical mass in terms of the supply chain, the growth is exponential. So we're at that point now where, you know, solar has been doubling and doubling and doubling. And eventually you get to the point where the doubling starts. So, you know, instead of doubling tiny to get something slightly larger than tiny, you're doubling something significant. So every year, your doubling turns into exponential
sure.
growth.
And the same kind of situation we saw with televisions, with computers.
Cell phones.
I can't have a computer in my house. Do you think I've won the lottery? And now it's you have a computer
in your hand.
Phone. It's
yeah.
in your hand. It's
yeah.
everywhere. So, okay. Let me get our first phone call as we continue to review the year in solar 2016. And eventually look ahead. And Suzanne is very eager to talk about a Trump administration. Now, there's some interesting points there that we'll hit as well. But let me grab our first phone call. Christine in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Christine.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I think solar is a lot more doable in a significant, maybe a little significantly smaller way than people think. I was off the grid for 12 years in Vermont. Now, mind you, it was a small cabin, but we only had one solar panel and a small mobile home inverter. And we ran a coffee grinder, 5 lights, a stereo, a computer. And the best thing was when you left the house, you could just turn the inverter off and you turned the whole house off. The solar panel that we got was purchased and installed for $1,500. And we used it for 12 years. We had a backup generator, but only used the generator twice because we needed to in 12 years. We had 4 deep cell marine batteries that were used, $70 each. And it's so much more doable than people believe. You don't have to get these companies to come in and do something for $25,000 or $30,000.
And I love that you mentioned the coffee grinder first. You have to have your priorities straight.
Right. Now, mind you, there were times I couldn't watch as many movies as I wanted to. But you'd be amazed what you can do with a lifestyle like that. And both of us had full-time jobs and dressed well and drove cars and looked like regular professionals. But when the town ran out of power, we were totally fine. And it was $1,500. And 4 deep cell marine batteries at $70 each.
Thank
you, Christine. An inverter for a couple $100.
All right. Thank you, Christine. Suzanne?
You're welcome.
Yeah, and one of the nice things about solar and other renewables is that they're scalable. So if you want to live an off-grid lifestyle and have a pretty minimal electricity demand, you can just use a couple of panels. If you want to have a lifestyle that's more energy intensive, you just scale the size of your system to meet your needs. So that's one of the nice things about solar. Another thing that the caller mentioned was her batteries. You know, that's another big story for 2016. So not only did the cost of solar decrease dramatically, so did the cost of batteries. And I hear a lot of people say, oh, batteries, they're new, and, you know, we have to wait till the technology evolves. we've been using batteries forever. You know, we've been having batteries in our calculators, batteries in our cars for decades and decades. What's new is the application of batteries to power your home. And so the system, the home battery solar system is what's new to us. But, you know, batteries are a mature technology. There's lots of improvements, lots of cost reductions. But we're getting to the point in the electricity sector where some consumers will decide, you know what, I don't want to have to pay my electric bill at all. I'm going to put, you know, my solar panels on my house, batteries in the house. And what Elon Musk wants to do is not only sell you a new roof, he also wants to sell you a home battery system and the car. So you don't have to pay for energy from anyone else.
And smart marketing and business. I mean, he's seeing the opportunity there. But you had a little bit of a mischievous smile. I mean, you seem to be saying he's taking advantage, but what's wrong with that, right?
No, there's no. I think it's brilliant, and it's so American. You know, it's do it yourself everything. You can literally not have to pay anyone for your gasoline, not have to pay anyone for your heating bill. There's so much wonderful improvement happening with heat pumps, ground source or air source heat pumps. So you can now literally heat and power your home and run your vehicle and not have to pay anyone else. And that's all money that can stay in the upstate economy.
All right, William in Rochester, I'm coming to you in just a second. One more question on the batteries, though. Any issue with disposal or anything that would cause concern about batteries?
Yeah, and I was just reading about the Solar Industry Association is working on a solar panel. Now that solar is growing so rapidly, they're trying to get ahead of the questions about recycling solar panels. So they're setting up recycling, reuse collection systems. So certainly with batteries, you know, with your car battery, you always take it in so someone recycles it. Car batteries are one of the things that are recycled at almost 100% rate. So the issue with batteries, there just have to be good recycling systems. But with that said, there's a lot of interesting work being done with saltwater batteries and batteries where they're completely benign substances.
Hmm. So a year from now, are we going to be talking about even more progress in dealing with batteries and sort of, as you say, in terms of systems and understanding what to do with them? Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the nice things you can do in this region is go out and see some of these technologies working. You know, Susan Spencer, if she was here with us, I'm sure would invite folks to some of her projects. And we certainly invite everyone to come down to Hunt Country Vineyards to see our solar and geothermal systems and our little windmill. I think it does help, too, to get out there and kick the tires.
Well, speaking of wind, I think William in Rochester has a question or a comment on that. Go ahead, William.
Yeah, hi. I'm all in favor of sustainable energy, but I wonder what's the relative merits of solar versus wind. I note that when the sun goes down, you don't get any more power from the sun, but the wind can still keep on going.
Thank you, William. Suzanne, go ahead.
Yeah, so just like you probably wouldn't invest all of your money in one stock, you would have a portfolio of investments. The same with investing in energy. It makes sense to have a whole different portfolio of energy generation assets. So Evan, you know, wanted to talk about solar on this hour of the show, but, you know, we could easily talk about wind, geothermal, biomass, hydro, micro hydro, a whole different range of things. Wind is, I think, the cheapest power in the United States right now is large-scale wind. Texas has become the largest wind state. It's also changing the politics of the energy discussion now, where wind is benefiting a lot of the Midwestern states, Texas and others. And it's reducing, and this is a big part of the energy story you don't hear when you see headlines where there's a war on coal or killing coal. What's happening is, you know, the marginal cost of renewables is essentially zero. So they can undercut all these coal plants when they bid into the grid, the large-scale wind and solar projects. So that's been an interesting development. Wind makes a lot of sense. For a homeowner, I don't necessarily recommend wind unless you have specific needs for it, because it does require a bit more maintenance than solar. If you're someone that just wants to have someone install it and not deal with it, solar's the way to go. If you are going to want to have 24/7 lots of energy and not want to put in a lot of batteries, then wind can make a lot of sense.
Does that help, William?
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the phone call. This comes up a lot, and might as well hit this now, because every time we have a conversation about solar, you have people asking, well, is Rochester the wrong region? We have more clouds than others, et cetera. And so I know you hear that a lot as well. So go ahead and address that too, Suzanne.
Yeah, I mean, well, and actually I was going to add to the last caller's question that there's sun everywhere. There isn't necessarily wind everywhere. So we're, you know, before you put a windmill in, you want to look at the wind maps and see if you're in a strong wind zone or a marginal wind zone. And unfortunately, where we are out in Bransport, we're a pretty marginal wind zone. But we have the same amount of solar, you know, across the state. It's pretty similar. And yeah, Germany has more solar installed than any country in the planet, and they have about the same solar resources as Alaska. So at this point, with the efficiency of the panels and the low cost, we have plenty of sun in this area to make them have a good payback for the homeowner.
My guest, Suzanne Hunt, is the president and founder of Hunt Green LLC, and she's a member of the Hunt family of Hunt Country Vineyards down near Keuka Lake in Bransport, and you just mentioned that. You know, sometimes showing people and letting them kick the tires a little is a good way to do it. How often do you have people who are visiting the winery to taste wines who say, "Hey, tell me about this"? Does that come up a lot?
It does, yeah. And we have the panels are on all of the large buildings, and so you see them from basically anywhere
you are, right?
From the tasting bar. And so, yeah, we have information at the counter because the staff get a lot of questions. We're putting up monitoring screens so you can actually watch the output of the panels in real time. And you can see what happens when a cloud goes over, and you can see how different it is on a sunny day versus a cloudy day.
And you get questions? Essentially people who want to watch those screens and wanting to know more about where did you get the panels and cost and, you know, sort of cost comparison and how much you're saving, those kind of questions?
Yeah, all of the above. You know, you get questions like what happens when it hails? And so then we have to explain that, you know, they test the panels and it's a Teflon glass and the hail won't damage it. And then, you know, unless it's you're getting to bowling ball size hail, which
right.
I think will have bigger problems.
Hey, climate change.
What happens with you? Never. The weather is getting more and more variable. You have people ask, they want to know about snow, and you just say, well, you know, they're dark panels and they're at an angle, so the snow melts off pretty quickly and slides off. And, and it's the long sunny days in the summer kind of balance out the snowy days. And so, yeah, we get all kinds of questions.
Let me grab John in Rochester next up on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Hey, Susan. It sounds great. I'm a proponent of solar and wind. The only negative, I think, is the subsidies and the tax credits. It sounds to me like there's a lot of momentum on the cost, the efficiencies of making these systems. Is the industry ready to eliminate the tax credits?
Thank you, John. Good question. Go ahead, Suzanne.
Yeah, and so the solar and wind tax credits are all a phase out. They're all designed to phase out. So, you know, the state subsidies phase out and the federal subsidies phase out. And I wish I could say that for the fossil fuel subsidies and the nuclear subsidies. So one of the things you run into, and one of the reasons that these clean tech industries do need some subsidy, is because they are competing against highly subsidized energy industries that have had subsidies for decades and decades. And, you know, this plant in Buffalo is a perfect example where, the U.S. manufacturers of solar panels are competing against, you know, all of these Asian producers, especially the Chinese producers. And not only do they get huge subsidies directly from the government, they also have a very predictable, long-term policy environment. So it's secure. There aren't all of these, you know, that changes, and then you have a subsidy for 2 years, and then it goes, and then it's just, you know, taken down, and then they put another one. So there's this predictable policy environment, and they have a national renewable energy strategy, which we don't have. So I'm with you. I am all for getting rid of the subsidies, but I think we just have to make it a level playing field.
Paul on Twitter says, it's funny, Suzanne says Bransport is marginal wind. On the bluff, we feel like we could power all of Penn Yan with our wind.
Well, you know what? It depends. It's very variable, even where, you know, if you're talking about a small home wind turbine, and it's going to be pretty low to the ground. It's very variable. So you probably have a lot better wind out on the bluff than we do on the side of the hill where we are on the western side, at the northwestern tip of the lake. But if you're talking about large-scale wind, then you get into the hub heights being 100, 200 feet up in the air, and that's a very different wind story up there.
All right. We have a lot more to cover here, and I see the phone ringing, so let me just grab one more subject before our first break here, and that is the subject, you just brought it up, Buffalo, Panasonic and Tesla with a recent announcement. There have been questions for a number of months now about what really is going to happen in Buffalo when it comes to panel production. What do we know now?
Well, yeah, so the recent announcement was that Panasonic is going to be a major partner in the Buffalo manufacturing facility. They're putting in about $250 million into that facility to match some of the government money and some of the Tesla SolarCity money that's gone in. And they're saying they could be producing panels as early as this summer. So I think that's a big relief, considering that it was such a tough year for the U.S. manufacturers with all of the cheap Chinese panels flooding the market.
We're talking about something in the range of 1,400 jobs there, about 500 plus actual manufacturing jobs is what I'm reading. So again, we could be looking at a summer launch of actual manufacturing of panels. What is that? Does that change the market in any way in this region, in this country? What does that do?
Yeah, well, they're saying that, you know, the first, you know, when they open, it'll be 500 jobs. And then over the next several years, that'll go up to, you know, up to as many as 7 or 8,000 jobs in the region. You know, I think anytime we can buy local, whether it's our wine or our food or our solar panels, you know, that helps keep more money in the economy and more money in the region. And, you know, as more and more people keep more and more of their energy money in their own pockets and are able to spend it in the community, it just helps the region, and it's a great economic development story for the region. And, you know, it's been interesting as I'm fixing up the old farmhouse and looking at the history of the farm in the region. You know, you don't come, you know, these kinds of economic development opportunities don't come along very often. You know, this is a really big one for the region.
Let me get back to the phones, and Bonnie in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi, Sue. This is Bonnie Canaan. How you doing?
Hi,
oh, it's a different Sue. There's a Susan Spencer.
Oh, different
Spencer
Sue. Okay.
It's a Suzanne. they sound alike.
I just joined. I belong to a neighborhood group, a couple of neighborhood groups that are interested in having someone come and talk about the community solar panel project. I don't know all the details, but my understanding is that it's something that is instead of having individual people do solar panel, it's something to do that is community wide that would help the community in that whole area of saving energy. And so that's one of the things I wanted to get contact with somebody who might be able to come and make a presentation about that, as well as solar panels, you know, itself, because a lot of people in poorer neighborhoods, you know, aren't as informed about a lot of these things.
Yeah, I'm glad that the caller brought up community solar, because that's another big story this year. And, you know, the point about making solar access to low and moderate income people is also really important to bring up, because, you know, if solar is now becoming cheaper than what you can pay your utility, then it makes sense to make that accessible to the folks who have less income. And in New York State, low and moderate income people make up about 40% of the population. So there has been a big push to make community solar available. There was an initiative launched by New York State in July of 2015 for community solar, yet we still only have one, maybe two community solar projects up and running in the state because of challenges getting finance and challenges that communities have because they aren't developers. They don't have big access to big lines of credit and that kind of thing. So the state did just announce $3.6 million to help kickstart community solar. I think Susan Spencer, who couldn't be with us today, would be the good person to suggest folks to come out to do specific community solar discussions in Rochester. But I can certainly also recommend some folks if we can put it on the website.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, community solar is an absolutely wonderful opportunity for communities across New York State because it allows the vast majority of people who either don't own their home or don't have a perfect credit score or whose house has shade or you know, have an apartment or that kind of thing to have access to solar, because it's, you put solar, you know, either on a huge building or over a big parking lot or in a field, and then, you know, it's less expensive because instead of going out to 500 different homes and doing custom systems on every house, you're just doing one project, so the cost is less. And people can opt in and out. So if you move, you can transfer your ownership stake in that community solar to someone else. So, and there's different business models for it. You can pay as you go instead of having to put money up front. So there's so many different things you can do with it. And it makes it, in theory, very accessible to low and moderate income people.
Okay. And so we've got Suzanne Hunt in studio. And the caller, Bonnie, was referring to Susan Spencer, who was also scheduled to be on the program today, but had to cancel. And we certainly wish her well. We'll talk to her on a different day. She's with an organization. She's the president and founder of Rockspot, R-O-C. Rockspot.org if you want more information there. But Suzanne, best you can tell, do you expect, if we're sitting here a year from now, we're talking about a lot more community solar and these kinds of projects happening in Rochester, or is it more slow in terms of the rollout?
Well, I think it's certainly slower than we would have liked. Mm-hmm. I know Susan's working on a number of large community solar projects. I'm part of a group called CoShare. It's folks all over the state that are working on getting community solar projects going in the Hudson, in the Adirondacks, and all over the place. And we're basically learning as we go, you know, because there's all these different challenges that arise when you try and do these 1 or 2 megawatt size projects. I'm certainly hopeful, and I think a lot of us are working hard to get these projects up and running. And it certainly helps to have the support of community members and politicians. I know, you know, I was really disappointed. One of our neighbors wanted to put a community solar farm up, and it wasn't going to be huge. But the local town officials were dragging their feet on giving them a permit, so they had to move it to another town. So there's things like that slow things down and get in the way, and hopefully we'll be able to get through those barriers.
We'll take more of your questions after our only break of the hour. Sam in Rochester, we're coming to you. We'll get a couple of comments via Twitter and email as well as we review the year in solar and look ahead with our guest for the hour, Suzanne Hunt, who is the president and founder of Hunt Green LLC. More connections straight ahead. And coming up tomorrow on the program, you might have seen recently that the Democrat and Chronicle worked to get the court records of the case surrounding the late Bill Nogé released to the public. And they won the right to do that. The judge ruled with the Democrat and Chronicle. And we're going to hear from Gary Craig, a reporter, along with their news director and the attorney who represented them, into why they thought the public needed to see those records and why it was so important, even though there were some critics who thought, well, Mr. Nogé took his own life before the election, that the record should have remained sealed. We're going to talk about sunlight and that process tomorrow on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sam in Rochester on the phone is next up. Go ahead, Sam.
Hi there. Happy holidays to you, and happy new year soon to be, I hope.
Yeah.
I have a question. I have a several-part question. I hope you have time to answer it. The first question is, has your guest looked into the actual manufacturing of the panels and how toxic or non-toxic that has become? I know it was somewhat sketchy there for a while, and the mining of the materials that go into it are not exactly environmentally friendly. And what happens when those panels break down? Can they be fixed and replaced? And at what cost? And it's a very costly investment. And if they don't last as long as they're promised, what happens to that investment? I didn't know if there's insurance programs or things like that. And also, why is it, I don't know if you understand why this is, but I always thought it would be a good idea for energy companies like NYSEG or RG&E to get involved in providing solar panels on people's homes, and then, you know, they rent the space on your roof and you get a discount or get free electricity, and then all that goes back onto the grid. Why would they not want to engage in that sort of enterprise? And I'll take the comments off the air. Thank you.
All right, Sam, thanks. Go ahead, Suzanne.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. So You know, the actual manufacturing companies can go into more detail than I can about the different system, you know, the regulations that they have to follow in terms of their manufacturing practices. And there are a number of different audits that they have to go through. And but I do think it's great for consumers to pressure them to make sure that they're using the very best, most sustainable systems in the manufacturing. Earlier in the program, I mentioned that the National Solar Industry Association has been developing a solar panel collection and recycling system. If you look at the panels, there's not a lot. Once they're made, it's silica, it's glass, it's metal, all things that are able to be recycled, reused, that are not highly toxic, as opposed to coal, which has all kinds of toxics in it. For every coal plant we close, we have less mercury in the environment and less particulates and that kind of thing. So solar, if from a full life cycle perspective, is far, far, far cleaner, including the manufacturing, than looking at the life cycle of, say, coal or natural gas. In terms of why doesn't your utility rent your roof and sell you the power, New York State is one of many states that's deregulated. So the utility can now, it can't own all of the generation capacity and sell you the electrons. They manage the grid, they sell you the energy, but they buy it from generators, from independent power producers.
Okay. Hope that answers your question. Thank you, Sam. We'll get back to the phones in a minute. We're talking to Suzanne Hunt, who is the president and founder of Hunt Green LLC. She's a member of the Hunt family from Hunt Country Vineyards. And let me grab the line one. Jim wants to talk about cost. So go ahead, Jim.
Hi. Yeah, it's costs that I was referring to. Is actually the last caller's conversation kind of raises the point. I'm not quite clear. Seems like everything I've heard, it sounds like there's still quite a lot of taxpayer subsidy on the panels and all of that so far, and that's the only way it can be made competitive, and now you're saying the costs are dropping, and I wonder if first part of the question, I guess, is can we consider ratcheting off that subsidy so that other people aren't paying for my power system, number one. And then kind of related to that, I'm curious about how the entire system, you talk about being able to put it in and then I understand you can sell back excess power at times that your system is running. Like I use almost nothing at my home in the daytime, and I need it at night when I can't produce anything. I keep thinking about putting on solar on my house. I'd really like to go that way, but I'm not sure how the whole system can be financed so that we can maintain the grids and all of that if people are selling things at retail to the utilities. And the utilities have to pay to redistribute it and keep the wiring systems and all of the other parts of that component up. I don't know if you can get where I'm going. It just seems like we're only talking about one level of the costs.
Yeah, so the costs are going down. And one of the things we talked about earlier in the show is that the subsidies are phasing out. So if you look at, for example, the NYSERDA subsidy, those grant monies come from everyone who pays for electricity in New York State. If you look closely at your bill, you'll see that you're paying a systems benefit charge. And so every single person, poor, rich, or in between, is paying systems benefits charges, which then go into pots of money that anyone in New York State can access to help offset the cost of a solar system. So there's that, but they are phasing out. So if you had applied for one of those subsidies for your solar system a year ago, you would have gotten a higher subsidy than you'll get now because they're phasing out to counteract the reductions in the cost of the system. So there's that. The federal tax credits are phasing out. After 2020, they start to phase out. The other part of your question about the grid, cost to the grid. So one of the stipulations of getting government support for your solar system is that you stay grid connected so that you're still paying fixed charges to the utility so that they can pay for the maintenance of the grid. So putting a solar, if you look in your neighborhood and you look around the region at the solar systems, our winery, Susan Spencer's projects, we're all still paying fixed charges to the utility so that they can do grid maintenance. The other thing about the daytime versus night is that The grid operators, every minute of every second of every day, are balancing the grid. At night, there's far less demand for energy, so a lot of the generation assets power down at night. And so, you know, one of the nice things about solar is that it is producing energy when we're using more of the energy. And the grid itself acts like a big battery, you know, because they're constantly moving the electrons around to where they're needed and ramping up and down in different places. But some of the interesting stuff to keep an eye on in 2017 are we tend to focus just on the energy supply side and the electricity supply, and we don't look at the demand side. And so the field of demand management and all these software and technologies, people might have heard of Nest thermostats. So thermostats where the utility can actually turn up and down your thermostat a little, and you won't even notice. It'll just be a degree or two. But when you do that across hundreds of thousands of homes, that means you don't even, you can take a whole gas plant and not have to turn it on. So controlling the demand as well as the supply is going to be a big part, along with storage. So New York State has pumped hydro storage. We have batteries. I'm working with some clients to put large-scale battery systems into old shutdown coal plants. So it'll be a combination of all of these different technologies. It's not just a story of putting more and more solar panels up.
Jim, any follow-up there?
First, I'm glad to hear that we're phasing out the. I don't like the idea of poor people. This seems like a vast wealth transfer from the poor to the rich in some cases, because well-off people get the benefits of solar systems, and taxpayers and other ratepayers are paying the fee. So I'm glad to hear that that's going away. I've always been troubled by that, so that's good. But I'm concerned. I guess. I'm looking forward to a much simpler and less environmentally damaging alternative to batteries. I'd like to see. I just recently heard about a program. I think it was in Switzerland or Austria, where they're using hydro power and reversing it when they have excess power in the grid, and they're putting their pump instead of using the turbines at the bottom. They're putting pumps at the bottom of a system and pumping water back up when they have excess power, and they're using that as a highly efficient means of storage of energy. So I'd like to see alternatives like that, if we can start thinking about, you know, something other than chemical batteries, especially the ones that use rare earths that are politically sensitive and also ecologically sensitive. So anyway, we're on the right path. I just think we have some more thinking to do. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of different issues in that comment. I mean, one of the things to keep in mind with your discomfort with solar subsidies is keep in mind that fossil fuels are subsidized hugely. Hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money every year go into subsidizing fossil fuels just in the U.S. alone. Also keep in mind that poor people pay a disproportionate high amount of their total income for energy. So to the extent that we reduce the cost and increase the efficiency of the electricity system in New York and decrease the overall cost of energy, we're helping the poor as well. We talked earlier also about the big push in New York State to make community solar accessible to low and moderate income people. That definitely needs a lot more effort to remove the barriers to that. But another thing to keep in mind when you think about our grid is that, you know, in the top energy specialists in the state will come right out and say that it was never designed to be efficient. It was designed to be reliable. And so we have a massively inefficient grid right now. We have, you would be shocked to know how many, for example, gas power plants are sitting idle nearly all year long. We have to pay to maintain them. We have to pay to have staff there ready to turn them on at a minute's notice if there's a huge spike in electricity demand. And that makes our electricity way more expensive than it should. So to the extent that we deploy storage in lots of forms, batteries and otherwise around, to the extent that we just deploy smart software so that we can adjust the demand so that we don't have to have all of those plants sitting there as backup, we actually reduce the cost to everyone, including folks that don't have the folks that are in the low income category. And I will just repeat that we do have pumped hydro in New York already. It's a great idea. There's all kinds of different kinetic flywheels and other things that don't require, as the caller pointed out, rare earth. And there's also all kinds of interesting research being done. And you can right now buy a saltwater battery for your home. So there's lots of alternatives that are being worked on, and I think we'll see a lot more investment there.
All right, let's keep it moving. The phone's buzzing, and Mary in Ontario is calling from a solar power plant. Is that right, Mary?
We're actually a solar company. We're called Sustainable Energy Developments, and we are the first in Rochester to offer what's called community solar. So I wanted to contribute and let everyone know that that is a new option to Rochesterians. So if you didn't want to get the panels on your roof, you can now become a member of a local solar farm.
Okay, and essentially what we were talking about earlier, Suzanne Hunt, yes?
Mm-hmm. It sounds like they're doing one version of it. You know, as I was saying, you can have different, you can have a pay-as-you-go, you can have a buy-into-it model, you can have lots of different models and lots of different locations. So it sounds like they're offering an option for folks in the area.
Okay, Mary, anything else you want to add there?
Yep, so New York is actually one of 14 states that currently allows for this program. And again, this isn't anything like Rochester has seen before. So if you want to learn more about it, you can check it out at seb-net.com or give us a call at 585-265-2384. It's called Community Solar. You don't have to get the panels on your roof. You don't leave RG&E. It works in conjunction with it. And it's a great way for people to go solar without having to pay that upfront cost. And it really makes it accessible to the masses.
All right, Mary, thanks for the phone call. And on the subject of solar on the roof. Oh, I had an email, and now it's gone.
Maybe while you're looking for that,
yes,
Evan.
Yes, go ahead, Suzanne.
One of the callers brought up net metering, and one of the things to know about what's going on in New York right now is that, and in many states across the country, Minnesota is one of the leading states, we're working on transitioning away from net metering, where the utility has to buy your solar back from you at retail rates, regardless of time of day or demand, to something based on the value, what they call the value of solar. So this is recognizing that there's value to having solar distributed so that it takes stress off of the grid. There's a value to having it distributed because you lose energy in transmission, and so it's more efficient to produce the energy where it's used. There's a higher value to deploying more and more renewables close to the big cities. In New York City, you know, 60% of the state's demand, but only 40% of the generation is near the city. So they're working on compensating homeowners and business owners who invest in renewables based on the value that solar provides, based on the timing, the location, et cetera. So right. You'll see that coming in the years ahead.
All right. On the subject of solar subsidies, Jane in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes. I think your last caller has forgotten that the prize here is cleaner air and water. And all of us benefit from that. So just personally, my point of view is that subsidies would be justified just on that. And we know we have a lot of environmental racism anyway, so sometimes the pollution hits the poor worse. But as long as we're subsidizing Exxon, and their fortunes may escalate, may become even better in the immediate future with subsidies and so forth. And so until we cry more about Exxon, I think it's a little hard to understand why we would complain about subsidies for solar when there's such an obvious, immediate, and long-term benefit for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. You actually had Suzanne Hunt physically clapping at one point in that response.
Well, you just have to look at the whole system. And I think folks will take a slice and get upset about a slice. But when you look across the whole system in the full context, we've been subsidizing, you know, public health has been, you know, we've been subsidizing the costs. We pay the health care costs of all the pollution that the fossil fuel burners spew into our air every day. So, I think we have to kind of look at the concept of subsidies in a much bigger, broader way.
You know, and she briefly hinted at what's to come in the next administration. You have someone from Exxon. You've got people in positions of power who are full-on climate deniers in the next administration. Do you have reasons to believe, though, that things might not be as bleak as some people in your sector feel, Suzanne Hunt?
Well, yes. The quick answer is yes. I went and I spent a week in Washington the week after the election, meeting with folks and meeting with senators and congressmen and analysts and kind of touching base and thinking through scenarios and what could happen. And, you know, one of the positive stories is that a lot of these technologies, as we've been talking about the whole show, you know, these technologies are just better. They're getting cheaper. As Tesla has shown, people are really excited about them and consumers want them. So on the one hand, you know, this is good business. And I don't think that, if there are going to be smart business people in important positions in the new administration, they should get up to speed and learn. You know, I mean, one of the things that anyone pro or anti-Trump can recognize is that he doesn't know a lot about energy. He really doesn't. So there's an opportunity there to educate him. And it sounds like Elon Musk is now advising him. So he'll be able to, you know, bring him up to speed on the market. The other thing is that it's not just companies in the energy sector that benefit from this. So if you look, Google is going to 100% renewables for all of its massive data centers. Companies like Apple are procuring massive amounts of solar. And so when I was in D.C., one of the senators from a southern state was telling, I think it was North Carolina, said that the state was going to repeal its supportive policy framework for renewables. And several huge companies, I don't know if I should mention them on air, but companies that people think about every single day, unbeknownst to each other, each sent delegations to the policymakers and said, if you destroy the supportive policy framework for renewables in this state, we will pull our data centers, we will pull our distribution centers, and we'll pull all of our jobs out of your state. And magically, the next day they announced that they were going to leave the renewables alone and policies alone. And so it's the power of business recognizing that these are just inherently better. I mean, we're not going to stay, you know, in the last century. We're moving forward. And so I think there's a real positive story there.
I'm not sure the next president cares to learn too much about the granular details of energy, but he has been, and always has been, interested in what is profitable. And if solar continues to show itself to be profitable, his administration might be more favorable to it. Yeah, possible?
Anything's possible.
It's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. I think we all just have a lot of twists and turns coming, and who knows?
Thanks for being here. Suzanne Hunt is the president and founder of Hunt Green LLC. Online where?
HuntGreenLLC.com.
HuntGreenLLC.com. Happy New Year. Thanks for being
here. Happy New Year, Evan. Thank you.
All right. That's Connections this afternoon. Thanks to Catch Wars, the engineer, and Randy Gorbin helping out with the phones. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.